Are you ready to break the silence and embrace the transformative journey of perimenopause? Well, you're in the right place. We are Natalie and Lisa, your hosts, and this is the podcast that's rewriting the script on perimenopause.
Join us in embracing the strength within, awakening dormant power, and closing the knowledge gap. We're here to inspire great health and ensure every woman is seen and heard.
Get ready for expert insights, relatable stories, and a community that gets it. Unleash your perimenopause power. It's time to own your story. Hey there, listeners. Have you had the opportunity to check out our Let's Talk community? It is a safe, supportive space for women coming into, going through, or on the other side of menopause. With weekly online meetups, learning resources, you can be sure of connecting with like-minded women who are ready to support themselves and support you. Go check out the link in the show notes to learn more about this vibrant community. And don't forget, we have got a very special offer. If you join right now, you can join for the lifetime annual fee of $99. Plus, if you join before April 21st, you can bring a friend along for free. Our first weekly online meetup is happening Friday, 5th of April, and we would absolutely love to see you there. Now let's get into today's episode.
Well, hello everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Perimenopause Power. Natalie, how are you today?
I am going awesome, Lise, and I'm excited because we have a return guest.
I know. There's always good stuff around a return guest, isn't there? So we are so very happy to have Catherine Elliott back on the program, or the podcast, I should say. For those of you that are well-entrenched listeners of our podcast, you'll recall that Catherine Elliott came on to the podcast at the end of 2022, and we've been in contact with Catherine and have caught up with her a few times at a few network events, and it's been lovely to see her. And the last one that we caught up at, we said we must have you back on. So for those of you that don't know Catherine, Catherine is one of Australia's leading specialist alcohol and binge drinking coaches for high functioning professionals. Her expertise and comments regularly appear in lifestyle, health, business, and women's media nationally. She is only one of three certified senior This Naked Mind specialist alcohol coaches in Australia and has been living alcohol-free since July 1st, 2019. As a former binge drinker for over 30 years, Catherine coaches from a lived experience and believes vulnerability and sharing our own stories is one of the most powerful tools in healing and finding a more balanced relationship with alcohol. Catherine, welcome today.
Oh, it's so great to be back with you, in both of you, Lisa and Nat, in this space. I'm really delighted to be here and picking up another really, I think, interesting conversation. I think particularly because the three of us all fall into this age range of midlife.
Yeah, bang on. And I must say, the work that we're doing, that you're doing, it collides together. And I will say that over the last, I'd have to say almost 6 to 12 months, I have been, and same with Nat, we've both been slammed with women that are finding that they, you know, that alcohol really isn't working so well for their bodies anymore. I know myself that, you know, I can't have a glass of champagne anymore. And but I have worked out it's the bubbles I like, not so much the champagne. So mineral water and soda water work really well for me. But there is a lot of women out there that still want to have a drink, but trying to find out why it affects them so much. And, you know, and I think that getting you back on here and deep diving a little bit more into this life phase around alcohol is the perfect time to have this repeat discussion. So could you share a little bit about your journey? I suppose mainly for the new listeners that we might have on the podcast since you first came on, how you became an alcohol mindset coach, especially with your focus on supporting women.
Yeah, sure. So my background, I guess, really in terms of becoming an alcohol mindset coach really started when I was 14, when I started drinking. I started drinking as a teenager in a very what I would call normalized binge drinking culture in the late 80s. I was always told that I was a good drinker, that I could hold my alcohol really well for a girl, woman. And so for me, my drinking identity and my big drinking identity was always something that I initially saw as being very positive, you know, and that it was something that I was good at. And so I used to, I guess, try and prove that I could keep up with the boys. I would stay out late, all of those sorts of things, and drink with, you know, drink late. And the other thing that I had was that I didn't actually get hugely bad hangovers. So I was able to sort of bounce back reasonably quickly. But my drinking, although there was this positive affirmation around it, there was also this personal worry, I guess, in myself that there were negative impacts of my drinking even early on, in my teenage years and my 20s and 30s and 40s. There was always this constant worry of my binge drinking. Why couldn't I stop drinking despite wanting to? And it wasn't until I became a mum and started to do a little bit more reflection and personal development, and my kids saw me drunk on a family holiday, that I really deeply questioned what I needed to do with my relationship with alcohol. I tried moderating. I tried lots of different things over the years. And it was then in 2019 that I decided, you know, it's time to really embrace and be open and curious to what life feels like without alcohol for a while, without a specific date to go back to drinking. And that really freed up my mindset. And it enabled me to just relax into it and look at it as an opportunity. As with all things in life, we never know what's coming our way. So I stopped drinking, had my last drink on the 30th of June, 2019. 6 weeks later in the August, I found a lump in my breast and I was diagnosed with breast cancer. And so then I was on another huge trajectory that I wasn't expecting. But both alcohol, my relationship with alcohol, and then my journey through breast cancer have really combined in a way to give me this lived experience where I now do quite a lot of advocacy work around the links between alcohol consumption and increased breast cancer risk, because I know that only, you know, less than 20% of women actually know that there is a direct link. And I'd worked in PR and media for probably 20 years, 25 years. And as I was going through breast cancer and I changed my relationship with alcohol, I really started to ask myself the questions, you know, what do I want out of this next phase of my life? What do I want my career to look like? And it was then that I thought, I want to be more purposeful and passionate about my work. And so I saw an opportunity. I thought, someone like me would have needed a coach like me, someone who had a lived experience, who didn't necessarily identify as a rock bottom daily drinker, but someone who had a problematic relationship with alcohol, who was reasonably high functioning, but needed to be seen and acknowledged and have support. So during COVID in 2020, I studied with This Naked Mind to become certified alcohol coach. I set up my business the following year in 2021, the Alcohol Mindset Coach. And so I'm coming into, yeah, my third year of business now. And honestly, it has been an incredible journey. And I guess that, you know, the most powerful thing about, you know, my job is that I get to guide and help people change their lives for the better. And that's what I love most about my job now.
Yeah, it's amazing. And again, we've shared many times through our podcast with many guests that we have, that us women have either a personal problem or challenge, and we realize that there isn't the support out there or the support that we wanted, so we go and create it ourselves. And we absolutely resonate with what you share and your story, and thank you so much for sharing that. In our conversation today, we wanted to delve further into the very pertinent issue around how alcohol impacts women, particularly as they transition through midlife and approach menopause. From your expertise, why do you believe women's experiences with alcohol begin to change during this stage of life?
Well, I think one of the most important things to acknowledge first that not a lot of women know or understand is that women's bodies actually process alcohol differently to men's bodies. We actually don't have as much of an enzyme, dehydrogenase, which breaks down alcohol. So women, by nature of being women, do not process alcohol as well or as quickly as men. When we go into our perimenopausal years, which can start any time, I guess, from our late 30s, mid to late 30s, is that correct? Again, a lot of women don't know is that our liver volume reduces by up to 1 to 3% every year. So its ability to process alcohol becomes a lot less. So as we get older, our liver volume might have decreased by up to 40%. So you'll often hear as women get older, they'll say, my hangovers are a lot worse, or I can't drink as much as I used to. And that can very much be connected with the fact that the liver is actually not able to process like it used to, given the reduction of volume. The other thing to be really aware of is that if we have been drinking, you know, cumulatively during our life into our perimenopausal years, there is often a lot of circulating estrogen in our system that has not been processed through the liver, because our liver basically, it looks at what is the thing that I need to process first. And if you've been drinking, it will always go to the alcohol rather than processing things like estrogen. So if we have a dominance of estrogen in our system, that can then, you know, links to breast cancer. And it's really interesting that I had high levels of circulating estrogen in my breast cancer. When I got the pathology back, it was very high. It was up around 99%. The other thing is that alcohol can exacerbate perimenopausal symptoms like, you know, hot flushes as well. It's very well known that drinking, you know, our blood vessels can widen, and that increases our, you know, our skin to sort of feel hot and hot flushed. Some of the other symptoms of perimenopause can be poor sleep and really finding it difficult to sleep. And again, we know that alcohol impacts our quality of sleep. So you look at a substance like alcohol, and then when you're in your perimenopausal years, it's really like pouring petrol onto the fire, exacerbating a whole lot of the symptoms, including, you know, moods as well. We know that alcohol impacts, you know, stress and anxiety. It is a depressant as well, so can really have an impact on our whole brain chemistry and neurotransmitters too.
Yeah, it just really collides, doesn't it? And I think that's why you would probably hear a lot of women say, I just can't drink like I used to, because it really does catch up with you given those physiological changes that are happening in a woman's body. And, you know, it obviously also collides with where they find themselves in life. Women are having children later these days, so they've either got, you know, kids probably, mid-primary, later primary, definitely kids in high school. And, you know, you're just trying to juggle life, and probably a lot of women getting back into the workforce as well after perhaps, you know, having a part-time element. So, you know, I feel like there's also a lot around alcohol being a bit like a coping mechanism. You know, many women note that they use alcohol that I come across that as a coping mechanism just to, you know, to help them get through these challenges of midlife and menopause. What are your thoughts on this trend, and why do you think it's a topic that's really not widely discussed or acknowledged, but yet it probably needs to be addressed, just like we're addressing, you know, the menopause taboo discussion?
I think it stems back to alcohol companies have been marketing to women since the 90s. They saw a real opportunity to market to women.
Mm.
And so we have been marketed to from that point in time that alcohol can help and add to our lives. You know, when we're in our kind of teenage years and young adult years, it's sort of there to party. You know, when we're young mums, it's helping us to cope or helping us to parent. And then I think when we get into, you know, this phase of our life, it's been the go-to, you know, the easy thing to grab when you are transitioning from work to home to parenting. Have a glass of wine, you know, it'll take the edge off. We see all of these mummy wine memes that come up that basically give you permission to use alcohol in all of these situations of your life. There's a lot of humor around it. And unfortunately, women have not been given other tools or techniques to use to help them cope. So of course, they become reliant on it. And that's why this whole rise of mummy wine culture is actually, you know, in my opinion, it's quite scary, because a lot of women are coming to that age in their 40s and 50s, and they don't know how to practice self-care. They don't know how to de-stress without really using wine or alcohol. That's actually the only way they know how to do it. So it's very easy to say, you know, alcohol or wine is not good for you. Don't use it. But there's a void then, isn't there? Like, how do we show women that there are other ways to unwind? And I think this is the piece that's really important, is that we start to talk about, you know, what some of those things might be, and that we start to really ensure that a practice of self-care is so important rather than just grabbing that glass or bottle of wine.
It's such a habitual process, isn't it? And if we've started drinking in our teen years, it just flows on into every other year of our life as well. Plus, there's also that perception, isn't there? There's that guilt and that feeling of judgment or shame if I stop drinking, or if I go out for dinner and I don't drink. It's just so ingrained in our culture. And there's that feeling that if I change my behavior with drinking, or if I don't drink, people say, "Oh, what's wrong with you? Are you not drinking?" And it's such an ingrained culture. And I think, as you alluded to, Lise, there is just such a stigma around not drinking. But on the same side, I feel like you walk down the supermarket aisle of the soft drink aisle, and I feel like non-alcoholic drinks are really taking flight, even pushing out a lot of the soft drinks, because we could have a whole other conversation on soft drink as well. But they're pushing them out too. So there is a shift, but I think, like menopause awareness, it's a slow shift, isn't it?
And we don't have that education either. Like, you know, we don't have that education around menopause, and we certainly don't have that education around, you know, that was a great discussion prior that you mentioned around our liver reducing and our ability to process alcohol. And I can tell you there's a lot of women that would have no idea around that. Okay, so maybe let's move towards a positive note here, shall we? What are some healthier coping strategies or lifestyle changes that you could recommend to women listening in, Catherine, who are looking to manage stress and navigate life transitions without relying on alcohol? You definitely hinted that that's something that we're not doing well.
Yeah, I think, again, I think this is, you know, this is a really, it's a really important topic, because I find when I have clients who come to me that they have no idea what to do when they're stressed. They don't know where to go. They don't know who to talk to. And so I think it is actually, it's small steps. It's getting to know a little bit more about yourself and also what you enjoy doing. So what I'll often say to clients is, if you feel stressed, one of the most important things you can do when you feel stressed is just to take a pause. Take a pause. Tap into your own energy and your own heart and your own breath and close your eyes and just breathe. We have this powerful tool, our breath and our heart, at any point in time. And when we can just close our eyes and tap back into ourselves and our breath and move through emotions and just be there for ourselves, that is a very important soothing technique. And it's one that we can call upon at any point in time. So that'll often be a simple one. Another one is really just get your body moving if you're stressed. Go outside, jump on the spot, run around, give yourself a bit of a, I often say, even just give your face a little bit of I don't really want to use the word slap, but, you know, just a bit of a, get things moving. I'll often, a pat, that's a better word, a pat, you know, where you just get some energy vibed in your body. Release, you know, release, release, and even saying the words, you know, release, release, or just saying, I know I'm stressed, I just need to, you know, get it out. So it's really about starting to understand and listen to our bodies a lot more, because stress is really often a perceived emotion as well. And when we can just accept that we are feeling a bit stressed or overwhelmed, and we're not reacting by having a drink, we're actually acknowledging and saying, I feel stressed. That's okay. Of course I feel stressed. There's this, this, and this going on. What I need to do is actually be there for myself. And I just need to release a bit of energy out of my system. And I just need to acknowledge my nervous system and let it know, hey, I've got you. So, you know, these are the sorts of simple tools and techniques that I work with clients. And I think it comes down to, you know, moving your body, breathing, doing some exercise. One of the other things that I find when I get stressed that I love to, I'll just go and literally make myself a cup of tea and I'll go and sit outside and just look at the sun, you know, just start to take in some sunshine and just give myself a moment. When we can pause and give ourselves some time and a moment, that's, you know, really, really important. The other thing that I think for me has been super useful is just building in a routine into my day that supports me. And for everyone that might be different, but for me, and you know, this is my mantra, you know, mornings are medicine. That's it. My morning is my medicine. So it starts off with having some time to myself away from my family, where I do the things that fill my cup. And by using my mornings as medicine, that actually helps me not to be as stressed or overwhelmed. And so really it's about building something into your daily routine that makes you feel good and is also, you know, what we call self-care. And, you know, that might be going for an hour run. It might be for someone yoga and stretching. It might be going and doing some weights. It might be sitting and doing some journaling. There are so many different techniques that we can use.
So good. And what I love, and there's a couple of things that I want to just flag, that you're acknowledging through the routine that your day starts in the morning, and the way that you set your day up for success is by supporting yourself in the morning. That's your time. And of course, people either like morning or they like evening, and it's working out what works best for you. But what I love, Catherine, is that every moment across your day leads into the next one, and you're not just caught up in that one moment, the 5 o'clock, where you know, opening up a bottle of wine and pouring yourself a glass of wine. You're acknowledging that what you do throughout your entire day leads to that moment where you might be looking for a glass of wine or a beer, perhaps. Also, I was really curious, in your opening to this answer, you spoke about how most people come to you around alcohol use and it being likened to stress and overwhelm. And just, I was just curious, was that surprising to you when you started your work? Because what I think about is people just think about drinking alcohol as something that they just do. It's just, I'm having a drink and that's it. But they actually possibly don't see the underlying feelings or triggers that sit behind it. And I was just curious if if that was surprising to you around how much that was coming through people's alcohol use.
It wasn't surprising to me because I had sort of witnessed it, I guess, in my own situation. And also, I think what you realize is cumulatively over the years as well, alcohol, it's like any relationship. A relationship with alcohol may start off as something, quite fun. But over the years, it tends to morph into something a little more sinister, more dependent. Doing it despite not wanting to really do it. So, for me, stress and overwhelm are, two of the main things that you see people coming to me for their relationship with alcohol. But the other thing that's really interesting is I have a number of clients who, and I was this type of drinker myself, who really were social binge drinkers. But that becomes problematic in itself. I wasn't drinking because I was generally stressed. I was just drinking to let go, to socialize. And look, there probably was an element of a buildup of stress over a week and then a bit of an outlet to let go. But that in itself is also highly problematic drinking for people because they feel ashamed, they have blackouts, they have memory loss, and they often don't believe they have a problem because society has normalized binge drinking. Oh, it's okay to go out and have a few big nights on the weekend. That's what people do. So once they're able to actually acknowledge that it's a problem for them and they want to do something about it, there's a real relief in that.
Such a great conversation. For our listeners who are curious about reducing their alcohol consumption or perhaps pursuing a sober lifestyle, what advice do you have for them as they begin this journey? And are there, obviously, you spoke about some initial steps and really connecting to their breath, but in that very first step of deciding, yes, I want to reduce my alcohol consumption, what is one of the first things that they could do?
So I love this question because often the focus is on behavior, on stopping drinking. I always like to bring it back to you actually have to have an emotion or feeling-based motivation to do this. So it might be around wanting to feel healthier, have a better relationship with yourself or your partner. It might be that you want to be a more present parent. These are better emotional goals to start off with rather than saying, I have to stop drinking or I have to drink less. And with that, there's this space where you can start to focus on the positives of what you will gain from choosing to drink less. And if there's an opportunity there to start to look at, well, rather than thinking that I'm going to be missing out, what am I going to be gaining through my choice of reducing my drinking? Starting off sometimes by just reducing the number of drinks that you have on a day or building some more alcohol-free days into your week. These can be really good opportunities to be open and curious. Start to ask yourself different questions. How do I feel the days that I don't drink compared with the days that I do? Do I sleep better? Are my moods more balanced? And then you start to have a bit of a comparison as well, because I think sometimes making big grand statements, I have to quit, I'm going to do this right now, there's a big focus on this KPI of I have to quit. But actually, you can make progress as you go along. And I think it is super important to feel connected to a positive emotional shift that you want to have rather than just a behavioral shift.
So good. And there's that element of presence as well. I suspect that people who are beginning or wanting to change their relationship, even taking that opportunity to be present when they open up a drink, perhaps, and actually that mindful eating, I just sort of come to that mindful eating or that mindful drinking and actually connecting and saying, Are you actually enjoying this? Are you enjoying what you're even drinking? Because it becomes so robotic-like that you just automatically go to the fridge. And that's so powerful in itself, isn't it? Being present in the moment.
Absolutely, it is, and that, that's a that's an activity that clients will often walk through when they're starting a program is conscious, mindful drinking, because what's happened generally is it is so unconscious that we are grabbing a bottle and we are drinking without even questioning it or realizing it or tasting it. It has become such a subconscious pattern, and that once we start to get more awareness around it, we start to connect with, oh, that's the trigger. 5 o'clock, maybe the time. It might be the closing down of the computer after work. It might be driving past the bottle shop on the way home from work. You start to realize and pick up on all these different triggers that are underneath this sort of reaction to go and grab a wine. And more often than not, what clients start to realize is that they drink without even tasting it or questioning it or knowing that they're even drinking sometimes.
It's really funny as you're talking through all of this. I'm thinking there's so much within our control, but there's still so much, like a lot of the strategies you're talking about, like they don't cost anything, to breathe, to do a lot of the stuff that everything's within our control. It's just where that person finds themselves at that particular point in time as to how they can enact it or change it. And I feel like, I think Nat touched on it before too. There is that real expectation that you'll drink, and then if you don't drink, what are some of the, what are some of the comeback sort of statements that people can make, around, maybe what are one or two statements that it's like, you don't want to feel guilty, so oh, okay, I'll have a drink. Often I'm not much of a drinker, but I love and I enjoy a glass of gin with a really beautiful gin with tonic, and I have one. And but I'm present within that moment, and I'm really enjoying it. I'm not doing in a robotic like state if I do decide to have one. But there are some people that will go along to something, go, no, I don't want to drink, but they feel compelled to have to take it on board because of that culture in which we are entrenched with in here in Australia.
Yeah, it's such a good point. I mean, one of the questions that I'll ask clients is what they're most nervous about or scared about in exploring their relationship with alcohol, particularly if they're going to take a break from alcohol. And it always ends up being they're really nervous or scared about what their friends or work colleagues will say about them choosing not to drink. So we'll often do some work on the messaging or how you respond. And it has to be something that they feel comfortable with. But one of the big tips is you actually, the best way to respond is in a positive way. Own what you're doing. So it can be something along the lines of, oh, yes, I'd love a drink. I'm driving tonight. I'd like a, yes, I'd love a non-alcoholic drink. I'm doing a health kick at the moment, so I'm not drinking. So you actually own it rather than saying, oh, I'm not drinking at the moment. That sort of, and then someone, oh, come on, you can just have one. So it's kind of about being positive and strong about it and just owning it. And that's what I've noticed, some clients will say, when I've worked out my messaging with people, it just helps. I know what I'm going to say before I go into a social situation, and it means I feel much more confident than being on the back foot and thinking, oh, this is awkward. I don't know what to say.
And in my experience too, people get used to not seeing you drink. And it almost, like Lise, I don't drink very often at all. But when I do have the odd gin, when I feel like one, like, oh, you're drinking. I'm like, yes, I'm having my one because I want to enjoy it. But people get used to it. And also at the same time, there will be people that you do lose as a result of your choices. And whether that's reducing alcohol or getting healthier or doing whatever. It's not a reflection on you, it's a reflection on them. And a lot of it comes from their own fears and also them perhaps themselves wanting to make changes and not knowing how to do it. And yes, it takes a little bit of thick skin to not let that get to you personally, but you will lose some people out of your life as a result of the choices that you make. And you soon realize that it's not worth, those people aren't your people, and there's obviously some toxicity. And again, it's another conversation for another time. But you do see those experiences, and it's sad, but that's the reality of change and life, isn't it?
It absolutely is. You can only do you in this world. And if you feel good about doing you, and this is the thing about your relationship with alcohol, everyone's relationship with alcohol is very different. And one of the things that I really think is important is that we don't ridicule other people's choices around their relationship with alcohol because we really have no idea what's going on for them. I think we need to be more respectful in Australia. I think we need to be more accepting of people who choose not to drink. There are a lot of people who choose not to drink for various different reasons. And this kind of culture of, you can only have fun if you have a few drinks, we really have to change that.
We need to tip it on its head, I think. Such great conversation, and we're sadly coming to the end of the podcast. And I'm just trying to remember what you might have told us last time with this question, because I'm going to ask it to you again, and you may or may not remember. But this podcast is all about power and finding, nurturing, and using our personal power as we transition through life phases in this perimenopause journey and beyond. We'd love to know from your experience, how have you come into your power?
Oh, I love this question. I have come into my power through connecting with a group of women that have supported and seen me in my power and supported me to grow. And that happened in the last 7 years. I joined this women's circle, and the incredible power that I've seen in a group of women who unconditionally support each other has just been incredible. So for me, it's been about finding connection to my feminine power, knowing that that feminine power and energy is so powerful, and that as women, we all have this. It's there. And I really feel that I have only just stepped into mine in this midlife period. And that's what I would say to women, anyone here in their midlife. At 46, 47, I changed my career. I just changed my relationship with alcohol. I'd been through, healing myself through breast cancer. And I truly believe that all my life experience up until then led me to a point in midlife where I had all this wisdom and belief where I could really step into my power. So I feel like this next part of my life is only going to get more powerful.
Oh, Catherine, you're speaking my language. I love that because I think we're a similar age, and I definitely feel like I've stepped into a new phase of my life, and navigating perimenopause as well. But I feel like I'm really getting on top of it, and I'm really excited about what's ahead. And I think there's so much we can paint around the positivity of this phase of our life going forward. And I'm planning on being around for quite a while yet. So that's just beautiful what you've just shared with us.
I do love that. And just that talk about connection and having women in your corner that you're being seen and you're being heard and you're supporting and empowering each other. I think, yes, we tend, particularly as we get older too, we seem to stay in our own circle. And I find as women in business, and we had this conversation at our networking event last week, actually, that we've come together because we've got a business and we want to support women, you know, each other through our business. And I remember sharing that when I come out of working 9 to 5 and coming to my business and attending networking events, my eyes opened to another world of women supporting other women. And I remember thinking, my goodness, had I not changed careers and gone out on my own, I wouldn't have experienced this. And I love that you have found that wonderful group that you've stayed connected with for 7 years, and you just come into that wisdom and that growth. And we don't see enough of it, I think, as a on a broader level. Definitely we see it in the women in business space, but on a broader level, we just don't see that enough. And, you know, we talk about empowering women and supporting women, but, you know, that feminine energy and the superpower that we have as women, I think, is just so profound. That imagine a collective of women across the globe just owning and supporting each other, I think, is so powerful.
Yeah, it's so true. And, you know, I think even bringing this back even to alcohol again is that often women are drinking because they're trying to mask, you know, who they are. They don't feel connected to themselves. They don't feel they can be authentic. And that has been one of the greatest gifts for me of removing alcohol out of my life, has been that I now truly feel a lot more comfortable in my own skin. And I think as women, well, as humans, we all just want to feel loved and accepted and comfortable in our own skin. And I think that's what I feel more in midlife, is I do feel a lot more comfortable in my skin. And I see this with other women at this stage of their life. You know, they're making decisions and choices that maybe they wouldn't have been prepared to make 10 years ago. And I think it's powerful, and I think it's courageous. And I think when there's a collective energy and consciousness of women in our phase of life working together and joining together, it's again, it's just so powerful. So I'm so grateful again to both of you for all the work that you do to support women in this, you know, phase of their life, and for having me back onto your podcast. I'm very grateful.
We are thrilled to have had you back for a second time. So with that, can you let us or let our listeners know where they can connect with you and learn more about your inspiring and insightful work?
Yeah, sure. My business is thealcoholmindsetcoach.com. That is my website. And my Instagram is at the Alcohol Mindset Coach.
Amazing. Thank you, Catherine. And I just wanted to share two words that keep coming up for me across this conversation is meaningful connections or meaningful relationships, because I feel like there's a real positive through reduction in alcohol or not having alcohol around, we actually really can mindfully and meaningfully connect with other people and have real deep conversations. So, you know, and I love that the three of us get together and really have this open, raw and honest conversation.
Yeah, that's a beautiful way to finish. I couldn't agree more.
Thanks for tuning in to Perimenopause Power. If you found today's episode empowering, don't forget to hit that subscribe button. Your journey through perimenopause just got a whole lot brighter.
And of course, we'd love to hear your thoughts, so leave us a review. Your feedback helps us empower even more women on this transformative journey. Until next time, keep embracing your perimenopause power.